Welcome back. Our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair is a 16-time Grammy winner. Also, he's got four decades of hits. I don't know how in the world, Joe. How do you play all of those songs at once? We'll find out. And his wife actually touring with him, keeping it all in the family. You may remember her from American Idol. This is back years ago, but she's a pretty successful artist herself, a Broadway show waitress. We'll get into that as well. Let's welcome to the show David Foster and Catherine McPhee. Good morning.
Morning, Gary.
Good morning, Gary.
Nice to talk to you guys. I've heard a lot about your show, but I want you to tell me about it.
Well, you know, the line I love to use is, you can expect the unexpected. It's a full-on entertainment show, and so, you know, I decided, we decided, you know, you go to some shows and they get up and they do their songs, but they don't talk to you. And they don't tell you, you know, their life. And so this is a lot of about our life together and our lives separately and the history of the songs. And of course, it's not all dialogue. We get a lot of music in, but it's just a fun journey.
Yeah. I mean, David has had so many, I mean, there's so many hits over his long career that it's impossible to cover all of those songs and in the 90 plus minutes that we have on stage.
Sure.
But we do manage to get through a lot of them while telling our story of how we met, which you mentioned earlier on American Idol. And so a lot of the storytelling comes from just the timeline of our relationship and then intermingling songs that are from way before my time.
David, listen, you've written so many hits for other people. I kind of have a twofold question. When you're writing a hit for someone, well, you don't know it's a hit unless, you know, it gets released. And do you have a certain way that you write for a particular artist? Have you ever written a song and you said, you know what, it's supposed to be for this person, but I don't think it's right for them. But you know who it is right for? It's right for this other artist. Has that ever occurred? Or?
Well, there's been a couple of times like that. I wrote an instrumental piano album with and with my friend Tom Keen, we wrote a song, and I called it Shaka, because I was desperate to have Shaka Khan sing it.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, eventually she did sing it, and that was on my mind from the beginning. But, you know, most of my writing has come from being with the artist, and they need another song on the album. And so it's kind of a built-in job. I didn't really have to peddle my songs the way a lot of songwriters did.
I remember your song for St. Elmo's Fire that was under your name. It was an instrumental. Love's Theme, right? Love's Theme to St. Elmo's Fire. That's a time where you got to take the spotlight with not just a producer and a writer, but, I mean, that was your name. That was that Casey Kasem said when it cracked the top 40.
Yeah, that was kind of an exciting moment for me because, you know, instrumentals don't exist really anymore on pop radio. But back then, that was the tail end of instrumental hits, and I was thrilled that I was able to have one.
So you've written so many hits for so many different people, so many different artists. How do you decide which ones to cover on this tour?
You know, it's kind of a moving target, Gary. You know, I love to showcase the songs I did with Celine Dion and Whitney Houston. My wife, however, I have to beg her to do those songs. She does them really well, but they're hard songs to sing, and they take a lot out of you. And, you know, you can imagine one singer. Although we have a male singer as well, Daniel Emmett, who's amazing. But for one woman to have to cover that much ground with Natalie Cole and Madonna and, you know, Celine and Whitney and God knows who else.
I cover songs from, I cover some songs from the show I did, Smash, and the Broadway show that I did. So it's a lot to cover, even though no one's a bigger fan than I am of Celine Dion and Whitney Houston. But we do them. We just touch on them. We don't do the whole thing.
Speaking of which, Catherine, you recently starred in both the U.S. and U.K. production of the huge smash from Broadway, Waitress. Tell me about that experience.
You know, it was a great experience. I was just coming off of four seasons of a show called Scorpion on CBS, and so I was, like, really looking forward to doing something different. You know, Broadway, I was really... And also, I had been offered to do some Broadway shows over the years, but I'd always kind of turned them down because I didn't feel that they were right for me or didn't feel special enough for me. And the role of playing Jenna and Waitress was a huge honor. And then, of course, it was an even bigger honor for them to ask me to open the show in the West End. So I never thought that that would be something that I had in my, you know, my resume. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a wonderful, it's so, so different. People always ask me, what do you prefer? You know, TV shows, live shows, Broadway.
That's
and
always,
the art forms are so different. And I would imagine that, like, how my experience on Smash versus my experience on Scorpion was so different. I preferred my experience on 2 years of Smash versus the 4 years of Scorpion. Like, it was just mm-hmm. completely different show. So I would imagine that the next time I go on Broadway, it's not going to be the same experience from doing Waitress. Every show is different. So, but for me, Waitress as a first Broadway experience, and then obviously the West End was incredible. I couldn't have imagined it to be better.
Well, I would think that there's an immediacy, right, of audience response and reaction where you know you're nailing it because how into it the audience is. I mean,
right.
I would imagine I've talked to actors in the past where, you know, one of the things they would say is, listen, we hope it's well received, you know, when it finally airs or when the movie finally comes out.
Yeah.
But with Broadway, when you're performing live on a stage, I mean, there's that immediate reaction from your audience.
Right. Well, that's similar to what we get when it's the shows that David and I do together. You really can kind of feel if the audience is with you or not. So, yes, you're 100% correct. When you're in on a TV show, you're in more of a vacuum and you're kind of hoping for the people like producers and directors kind of be the perspective because you don't have that live experience.
Sure. Listen, I don't want you to divulge all your stories here. I want people, of course, to attend your show. It's going to be over at the Guard Arts Center in New London on Thursday, May 16th. But maybe you can give us a small sample of your favorite story that you share during your show.
I like this Celine Dion story you share.
There's a song I produced for Celine called All By Myself. It has an excruciatingly high note in it that I put in because I wanted that exciting moment. And then we show a little clip of Celine complaining about that exact high note.
That's a hard song. Anything that's, I would imagine that's intimidating. I don't care who you are. That's a hard person to emulate.
It is.
Yeah, Celine even had, you know, she had trouble with that song too, with that note in particular. And but, you know, she's Celine. She nailed it.
You know, you were talking a little while ago of when you two met. Was it back in 2006 on American Idol?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
and then you guys got married in 2019. Let me ask you, was there chemistry at first sight back in 2006?
No, we were both just there I was a contestant. David was there to be a guest mentor. So we were both there with our own tasks. I was just trying to survive each week. And David was just trying to be a good mentor. He and Andrea Bocelli were guest mentors.
Mm-hmm.
And we were not thinking about, you know, attraction at that moment. I do recall when we went to his recording studio, when I was lucky enough to have him produce my first single. I do remember that day in the studio, really getting a feel of David as a producer and understanding his charm and his ease and his greatness. So that was the beginning of kind of knowing how charming he was, irreverent as he is, but charming.
David, are you getting red?
Not at all. No,
he's eating it all up.
I was drawing on her foot as she was talking about that.
Your son was born a few years ago in 2021. Has touring become a family affair? Do the three of you hit the road together?
Well, we have so far, but we realize that the window's closing and now these turn three, that school is going to be, you know, within the next year or two at the most.
Yeah, true.
So we're trying to squeeze all we can out of it because we love having on the road and he loves being on the road. And I think in its own way, it's a good learning experience.
Yeah. So in a lot of ways, we probably won't be doing as much touring. This next year will probably be the last of consistent touring because we're going to have to be at home a lot more. So get your tickets.
Yes. All right. We're going to take a really short break. More with David Foster and Catherine McPhee right after this. We are back with David Foster and Catherine McPhee. They're going to be over at the Guard Arts Center, New London, on Thursday, May 16th. Tickets, there's not money left, so I would say get online. Do it today. Tickets are still on sale. I said that I was telling you earlier, I heard that your show was real entertaining from beginning to end. Do you have a favorite part of the show? Like, each of you, I know you mentioned Celine Dion a little earlier, Catherine. David, do you have a favorite part of the show?
Well, honestly, yes. When I go to the audience to get people to sing, I just love it because it's always random. And the person that waves their hand the hardest is usually who I go for. You know, often you'll see somebody pointing to somebody else and beg, but I don't want that person. I want somebody that really wants to get up there and sing. And for the most part, they're not very good, but they're fun and they're good enough. And then once in a while, there's great people too. So it's really a spontaneous, I mean, talk about spontaneous. I never know what's going to happen.
And listen, you've written so many singles over the decades. I'm not going to ask you the obvious question you're probably asked, you know, so often. Do you have a favorite? It's kind of like picking a favorite child, I've been told. But is there one that stands out as the most challenging that whenever you hear it, you're like, oh my goodness, writing this song, you know, others come so easy. This one, however, this one was challenging. Does that any song or two come to mind?
Yeah, well, I struggled with my friend John Parr and I wrote the song Man in Motion.
Right, also from that.
Fire.
Yeah.
And that song went to number one, and I never thought it was even a hit. We struggled for 3 days to try and write it, and we just weren't getting anywhere. Then we found some new inspiration for it, but I just never thought it would be a hit. Conversely, I think the song that I produced for Chicago called Hard Habit to Break is my most perfect record. Not song, necessarily, but my most perfect record.
Why?
That I think I produced.
Why
so,
is that?
I don't know. Just when I hear it, I still sort of, I like what I hear. You know, most people are tough on themselves, and I am too. But that song, I hear, that's the closest to perfection I think I ever got.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I've seen Chicago in concert many a times. I've spoken to Bill Champlin, who you co-wrote an Earth, Wind & Fire song, right? After the Love Is Gone.
That's right.
Yeah. And I'm familiar with Sons of Champlin, but when you were introduced into Chicago as a producer for Chicago 16, you really took that band, which was a very avant-garde jazzy rock band, into a more pop-oriented direction. And it produced a ton of hits. And this is what I don't understand, because they were ready to lose their record deal from their record label. You resurrected them. But then years later, they go back and I don't want to say they talk smack, but they almost say, well, David took us in a completely different direction, and, you know, we're really angry about that. But yet the irony is they still play all those hits in concert.
Yeah, but, you know, success is obviously measured in many ways. And I don't blame them for that. I mean, I was young, I was arrogant, I was cocky, and I really took over because they had no direction. And the direction ended up being the direction that I liked, rather than what I thought was best for the band. Mm-hmm. And I understand why they were upset about that. And to this day, we've talked about it at length with all of them, and I've sort of hashed it through with them. Yes, of course, the success was great, and it's helped them have this great touring situation now. But they were a great, great band before me, and they'll always be a great band.
Was it interesting to produce both Peter Cetera's solo album as well as Chicago 18, let's say?
Well, I didn't produce Peter's solo album. I wrote a song.
Oh, you wrote a song. Okay.
The Glory of Love for a solo album, but I didn't produce the album. I stayed with the band and did Chicago 18, which had, you know, I guess moderate to good success. But we obviously missed Peter.
Yeah. I think the band even misses them to this day. There was a few years ago, I've only got about a minute left. A few years ago, I caught this PBS special. Josh Groban came on stage, and even Peter showed up on stage, and it was absolutely breathtaking. And I know that people can buy the DVD. How did that, this is really my last question because I'm out of time here, but how did that materialize?
You know, it was born from my manager, Mark Johnson. He came up with this idea that I should do a big blowout. So I got Andrea Bocelli and Josh Groban and Michael Bublé and Celine and everybody that I worked with, I tried to get And it was just a great blowout. And by the way, we're going to do it again at the Hollywood Bowl on November the 3rd.
Ooh.
Same drill with the same people for my big birthday. So watch for that.
All right. Last question, 30 seconds or less. What can people expect? Really short. Is there a surprise or any surprises when you perform in New London on May 16th?
Well, you know, Elton John will pop in, the Beatles will pop in, you know, that kind of thing.
You're the best. David Foster, Catherine McPhee, I wish the best to both of you, and we're looking forward to the show at the Garden Arts Center, New London, on Thursday, May 16th. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Gary. Talk to you.
I look forward to it. It's always a pleasure.
Ciao, buddy.